Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Now, when you've been a former 911 emergency operator and police dispatcher in the United States, you might think, well, that's enough for anybody's life, surely. But after 12 years working in that system, you then shift to become a fantastic romantic novelist. And then, even more excitingly, you actually switch genres again and move into crime thrillers and so on. We can only be talking about the fabulous Rachel Tomeo. How are you, Rachel? Okay.
I'm good. Thank you.
Excellent. So they do say writers write what they know about, what they experience. Was that in the back of your mind when you're taking emergency calls on 911 and saying, oh, I can just break a note for this for my novels?
No. Not really. But I mean, I wrote as a child and then like all through my teen years, and then I just stopped. And then I picked it up again in my late, I was like 36.
Yeah.
I started again, and that's, you know, where all this happened. That's just where I happened to be.
And so it's gone on from there. And obviously, it's a quite a shift from romance to thriller and so on. And the internationally renowned domestic thriller, Break My Bones. No messing about. I mean, say what you mean, Rachel. I mean, clearly, you know, message is there.
Well, originally, that book was going to be called Sticks and Stones. When I was writing it, that was the original title, but it never didn't feel right. You know, just like, you know, so, and then I changed it to Break My Bones. It's about domestic violence. So it seemed to fit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so obviously positivity coming through. Talking about positivity in North Carolina, somebody always brings a bit of positivity to us is the wonderful Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Hello. I'm good. How are you both?
Excellent. Okay. Well, I mean, Lincoln is not in the high 70s, which I gather is the score in Fahrenheit as far as Rachel's base in Texas is concerned, or Houston, I should say, from that point of view.
Yeah, I've got a cool friend. It's about 65, 70 degrees here right now.
I'm sure you can cope. You know, I mean, I could take the political temperature of the country and say it probably means the same thing, but we won't talk about that because I think there's something happening between a guy called Joe and a guy called Donald, I think, next week. But, you know. We'll find that out, I'm sure. Jessica, you've had a chance to have a look at some of Rachel's sort of biography and so on. And before we actually move on, obviously, to the awesome fact that you're donating 50% of the royalties for your latest novel to actually help with postpartum depression. Jessica, any quick questions you want to put to Rachel?
Yeah, I actually I went down a bit of a rabbit hole last night, staying up too late watching your TikToks about your book and about your time as a 911 dispatcher. And I was kind of curious about how you started getting involved on TikTok as far as just discussing your career on there and your book.
I started it kind of a whim because somebody I knew had started a TikTok and theirs like blew up and I never really considered it, but I was like, well, I guess it can't hurt, you know? I watched it for a little bit, made one or two videos, and all that time I was thinking, I would have been wondering about talking about my time as a 911 dispatcher. It was about a month probably I was on there before I actually started doing it. I've only been on there for a couple of months. And I decided to try it, and like my third video, after it'd been up for like a week, it went viral. It has still is sitting at like 1.7 million views right now, and that's the video I got all those postpartum comments on it, and that's where I decided, well, maybe I should do something, you know. But it took off, and I know enough about it to keep talking about it, so that's just what I've been doing. I put the new book stuff in there in between. So
talk us through, Rachel, as I say, the latest sort of novel, of course, Carnal Knowledge, and where you're sort of developing that. Because I'm sort of thinking, again, it's a form of romance, but a much darker romance than perhaps people are used to.
Well, Carnal Knowledge isn't really a romance. That one's more of a psychological thriller. It's called Carnal Knowledge because it's in the Deadly Sin series. It's about the sin of lust. But lust in the sense that lust is an unsatisfiable hunger for not just necessarily something sexual, but it could be for anything, really. You know, lust for food, lust for whatever. And that's what it is. It's about a serial killer and this woman who finds out she's being tracked by this killer and just what goes from there. So, yeah, the book was inspired when I was in my last year of dispatching. I went to a conference and I heard Elizabeth Smart speak. And I was super excited because she was like the keynote speaker at the end of the conference. And after hearing her story, I got the idea for the series. So,
Jessica.
So I thought that the line where you said in your little book blurb, it was, what would you do if you found yourself on a serial killer's hit list?
This could be good advice for whoever loses the presidential race, of course. You know, just a thought.
No.
I'm just putting it out there.
I think that's, you know, it's such a dark theme, but we see a lot of kind of books about serial killers, and I was wondering how you kind of get yourself in the mindset of something so dark while, you know, still trying to go about your day and be happy and spend time with your family while you're writing a book that's a bit dark.
Well, I think that stems from my years as a 911 operator, because I can turn it on and off very easily. It's like whenever I was dispatching, when I left, unless there was a call that was just like bothering me and haunting me, that's the only time that I had struggled with it. But for the most part, when I punched out, you know, and it's not really a career where you share a lot, you know, unless you just really need to talk about something, because people don't always want to hear about that. So I just turn it off. But in carnal knowledge, when I was writing it, I was back and forth, because most of my books are multi-POV. There are multiple people in the books, and this is the first book that I've ever written from one person's point of view. And because I just couldn't, when I was thinking about it, I was like, when I was trying to pick another point of view to write from, I couldn't do it, because first of all, it would ruin the ending, you know, and second, I just couldn't get myself into a killer's head. I just didn't know how to do it. So I decided, I had several people, well, why don't you try and write a book? I'd write a book from one person's point of view and see how it goes. That's what I did. They challenged me, so I did. But this one's from her point of view, and I've read a lot of serial killer books over the years, and I've never seen one quite like this one, where she knows what's happening, and is she just, like, waiting for something, and all this stuff keeps happening. So,
yeah. I mean, I just thought, oh, amazing, obviously, you're just so bright, and yet, you know, you're writing about such dark subjects, but never mind, that's a different line entirely. It's an old line about crime fiction. Let's talk about postpartum depression and why you particularly felt moved to obviously assist in terms of raising the consciousness level, of course, of this scenario. So share with us, Rachel, in terms of your rationale for this.
Well, there were so many comments on that video about postpartum. Even though the video itself, there's a lot of assumptions in that video. It's about a 911 call that I took that the woman had postpartum, but she actually didn't. However, I'm definitely an advocate for, you know, people that have mental illness and need help with that mental illness, because there's so little research and medication and those things. And people are so afraid to say something, especially women with postpartum. It's like, they're embarrassed that they have it, even though it's so common, you know, they're afraid to reach out for help until it's almost too late. So raising awareness for something and making people less ashamed of something that they can't even help, that the woman next to them probably had too, you know, make it okay to talk about it, you know? I thought I could use a platform and the new book to just raise awareness a little bit.
Jessica, your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I think it's so important that we recognize this kind of facet of mental illness that's honestly so often just swept under the rug or treated as lesser. I saw one of your TikToks that was talking about the difference between postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. And it was really interesting to me, because just the other night, there was a post on Reddit about a woman who everyone in the comments was like, oh, you need to get her to a hospital, she has postpartum psychosis, it sounds like. And I think that we forget how often that happens. So what would you recommend people do if they're trying to learn more about this? Like, what are the first steps you would take to someone who really wants to learn about postpartum depression and how to help someone who has it?
Well, first of all, I mean, one of the problems with depression is people don't realize they have it. And then when they do realize they have it, they won't admit it. That's a problem. So approaching someone, it may be difficult, but I say, if you know someone that you feel is having issues, reach out to them, reach out to their loved one, their husband, their friends, whatever. Try your best to get them help. Maybe don't leave them alone if it's that bad, you know? It's difficult because depression is so difficult because people don't want to admit it because they're so embarrassed, like there's something wrong with them that they do have it.
It's worth noting, actually, that in Britain and I think in Europe, postnatal depression is the term that tends to be used for postpartum depression. It's the same thing. It's basically the depression that you actually have as a woman, obviously, after giving birth. And it's something which, as you say, because it's a time where society perhaps actually almost enforces, oh, it's fantastic, it's great, everything's fantastic, it's great, etc. Whereas actually, if it isn't, it's sometimes difficult to come to terms with that. Because as you rightly said, Rachel, you know, we still live in a society whereas although there's greater time given to sort of issues relating to talking about mental health and so on, I think there's still a sort of notion that, well, at the end of the day, you should be tough enough to get through this, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, you know, hats off to your good self for obviously raising that profile and doing that accordingly. I mean, in terms of the comments, is there a sense in the States that actually there is a major sort of issue that needs to be talked about here that actually sort of just hasn't because it's just, again, been allowed to lapse over the years?
I would think yes, because women, I've known women that have had it and they don't want to admit till they have had it until after it's over with. And then there's a lot of people that don't even know that much about it. I mean, like the fact that postpartum can be delayed until, like, say you breastfeed your baby. It may not kick in until after you stop breastfeeding, which may be a year later. You know, you've had the baby, you breastfed for a year, you stop breastfeeding, and all of a sudden you get postpartum. You know, there's things like that people don't know. And I just don't think women should be so ashamed of it. And it's like depression. I saw a TikTok video the other day about depression, and what she said kind of stuck with me, because she said depression is a liar. It is a liar, and it lies to you. And you get so sucked into it, at some point you can't see it anymore. You know, you just think all these terrible things that aren't even true. But if you catch it in the early stages, you know, like you can sense it coming, you know, and if people would stop saying, what do you mean you don't want to hold your baby or you don't want to be near your baby? Because, you know, you're supposed to, but having a newborn, I've got two kids and it stinks. You don't sleep and they cry all the time. You don't know what you're doing, you know, and you're sore and exhausted and your hormones are crazy. You know, the newborn is absolute hell. You know, it's not until later when things calm down and even out a little bit that it's less difficult. But they're like, what do you mean? No, it's okay for her to want to put the baby down. You know, you know.
Let's move on, Rachel. Let's move to your website, which is the correctly entitled RachelTomeoWrites.com. That's RachelTomeoWrites.com. I know, websites. I mean, you're TikTok. You're so ahead of the game when it comes to... But let's be traditional. Let's talk about websites. And I'm looking at, obviously, the descriptor for the Deadly Sin series, where dark twists thrill and things are not as they seem. Is that something which you're deliberately looking at? I'm almost sensing a kind of gothic approach to the lie there, sort of contemporary 21st century gothic take in terms of, as you said, the seven deadly sins and so on.
Well, yeah, I wanted it to be a little different. And I like those twisted novels where things surprise you and something's not quite what you thought it was. Those are my absolute favorite. And the first two have achieved that, and then the third one will achieve that as well. But yeah, I honestly when I signed with a new publisher for the Deadly Sin series, and they were the ones that told me, they kind of structured me a little bit, Like, you need to focus on the thriller. It's what you're best at. You're a thriller author, so let's make it all about the thriller. So that's what I did. Changed the logo and everything.
And ever had any thoughts about maybe a kind of universal mashup between characters from, say, Once Upon a Kiss meeting up with one of the Seven Deadly Sins characters and seeing what would manifest?
It was funny you should say that, because one of the books, I Break My Bones, the character, a couple of the characters from that book came from Reach For Me, one of my romances. Reach For Me, and then characters from that book came out of the Friend Zone series. Let's just say that. I've written too many books and I get confused.
it's the old, you know, the Tomeo universe, as we actually say. It all works on that side of things. It's weird. At least I managed to get through the interview so far without saying, you say tomato, I say tomato. But, you know, what a hate. Sort of lines. Yeah. Jessica, anything else?
Yeah. So with your book writing, not to talk about TikTok again, but
once, really. I don't know what I'm doing.
There was one where you were kind of, it was very funny, you were reading your book and you were saying how your friends or family were kind of like, would be shocked when they read it and surprised. So what were your your friends and family's reaction when you actually came out with this book and you're like, hey, it's about a serial killer? What were their reactions?
Honestly, my personality doesn't match what I'm writing at all. It really doesn't.
Well, thank the Lord for that, Rachel. Otherwise, we don't know where we'd be. At least I'm in a separate country, but what the hey?
Empire. One of my friends read one of my books, and she was surprised because I just kind of came out of the closet with writing. Nobody knew that I wrote for the longest time. You know, and she found out, she read one, she was like, I can't believe you can write like this, you know? And a lot of my family doesn't, they're not really readers, but I tell them what the books are about and they'll look through them and they're looking at me like, oh my God. It's not as bad as you think, I promise. I don't match my books, really.
And in terms of, say, cross-promotions, are we looking for audiobook series? Are we looking for TV, movie, and such like? Is that in the pipeline, or is it a case of it is, but I can't say anything about it?
That'd be awesome, but some of my older books are already out on audio. I haven't reached out to the publisher yet to ask about, because several people have asked me about audiobooks for the Deadly Sins books, but they haven't said anything. You may need to ask them.
Well, I think as Jessica's correctly identified, you are quite literally all over social media with the Twitter, the Facebook, the TikTok, which is interesting given, of course, the challenges that TikTok have actually had in the United States. But let's not go there because that's another issue entirely. But it's doing good for China. That's the important thing. And if we can do something, we can at least sort of give a nod in the direction of what's happening over there. What are your own influences, Rachel? I mean, was it a case of you write obviously from your 911 stuff, or is there a case of there are specific authors that in both genres you were particularly taken with?
I have to say, it's probably going to sound weird considering, but Ted Dekker is probably the most, he inspired me the most, despite the fact that he writes Christian fiction. But his books are so brilliantly unique, you know, like his Circle series, where, you know, if you're familiar with the book at all, the series at all is basically about this man who falls asleep in one world and then wakes up in an alternate world, you know, and the books are written in a circle.
Happens to me on a daily basis, you know, it's just strange enough, but, you know, we do the best.
Right. And it's so brilliantly unique. You know, I'm like, man, if I could just write something like this, you know. He's written thrillers, too. He started out writing thrillers. Mm. He's a New York Times bestseller. And, you know, I like Stephen King, obviously. I like his thrillers, though, because horror scares me. So, it's like The Green Mile and, you know, all that. It just comes from me. I just have this stuff in my head. I don't know where it comes from.
Well, of course, I mean, given that we're right in the midst of trick or treat, you don't want to sort of say about sort of Halloween being sort of a bit spooky. Just keep breathing. That's the important thing. All will be well with the world. That's the important thing. Jessica, any closing thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I would say what is your favorite part been about the writing process? Have you had a lot of fans from your different social media pages actually find your book due to that? Or is it just like a very hardcore literary group that wants to read it?
Well, once I started getting past the fear when I was first putting books out of people actually reading my books, and you know, now people are reading it, and now on TikTok people are finding me and they're commenting. And I just had one today. She sent me a message, said, "I read your book, Break My Bones. I stayed up all night because I couldn't put it down. It was just absolutely amazing." You know, those kind of things. Yes, that is my favorite part. Hearing that I can't put it down. I was up half the night, you know, that your characters like stuck with me, you know, like, oh, I'm doing it right. You know, if I keep you up all night, then I'm doing it right.
Sharing the stories and telling the lives, which is absolutely stuff. Rachel, any other websites you'd like to just promote or say how people can obviously get in touch with your good self, or indeed, more importantly, get hold of the Deadly Sin series?
The Deadly Sin series should be available pretty much anywhere. My website, like you said, racheltomorrowwrites.com. I try to keep that updated. I'm most active on TikTok under Rachel Tomorrow Writes. I'm on Facebook too, but I don't have that much going on there.
Facebook seems so past tense these days. It just seems like yesterday's social media completely. What the hey, you know? I mean, I'm still trying to get used to where's MySpace gone. You know, it's just unbelievable.
Oh no.
MySpace died.
Rachel, have you had a reasonably interesting link with us on the program today? Has it been a good Zoomer for you?
Yes, I've had a good time. Yes, definitely.
I've got to ask the question: are you actually in your car vehicle? I mean, presumably, obviously, you're not driving at present, but
no, I'm not.
Is it parked up outside somewhere in Houston?
It's 11:50 here. So I'm on my lunch break, actually. So I came out and sat in the car so you'd be able to hear me.
Wow. This is fantastic. Well, the next critical question is, will you join us again? Will you come back and come back on the program?
Yes, definitely. I had a great time.
Excellent. Rachel Tomeo, huge thanks indeed. Jessica, thank you for joining us from North Carolina. We'll speak, Jessica, I think, with your good self in a couple of hours or so from now. And Rachel, yeah, will speak again, I'm sure, very soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Earlier this week, we were hearing from Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, who clearly were talking about the implosion of the cinema industry. But it does seem as though the spin-off from gaming is continuing to expand ever more. And as perhaps our leisure habits are forced into changes and so on, the UK gaming market is indeed an ever-growing industry with 26 million people between the ages of 6 and 64 enjoying gaming at some time over the sort of general few weeks and so on and so forth. Now, according to this, we decided to actually sort of find out a little bit more about a new system that's being launched with respect to the Cadbury Heroes League and indeed the importance of games in general. So who better than from the Division of Games and Arts at Abertay University, the wonderful Dr. Lynn Love. How are you, Lynn?
Hi, Alex. I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Now, is it a case of we are seeing, as I suggested, a huge sea change in terms of people's leisure habits, that gaming, which has always been big, but actually because people literally are unable to engage in a lot of leisure pursuits, like going to the cinema or as safely or as regularly as they might want to, that actually gaming is going to be a growth beneficiary from this?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. As you said already, the game industry is huge, but during lockdown, we've seen real growth and a shift as well in parents' attitudes to gaming. So, you know, where once, you know, maybe before lockdown, parents might have seen gaming a barrier to connecting with their kids, or maybe not as a positive thing, they're now, through lockdown, starting to use it as a way to connect with their families, which is really kind of quite exciting.
Certainly a few years ago, the launch of the Wii Fit product and various other factors, I think, was sold on the basis of bringing families together. Is it more a case now that literally the family that plays together stays together, or are there still competitive edges in there as well?
Well, I mean, I think the competitive element is perhaps one of the reasons that, you know, it encourages people to play a bit of healthy competition. But what we're also seeing through this research that Cadbury Heroes has carried out, that gaming is, their parents are using gaming as a tool to connect. And actually half of the parents that responded were taught by their kids how to play the game. So it's not necessarily just about healthy competition, it's about knowledge sharing. And you know, the kids get to be the experts. They know how the controller works. We found that actually 25% of the respondents had never picked up a controller before. And can you imagine the benefit that has to the kid, you know, the children who are the experts and get to share their knowledge with their parents, and then have the joy of seeing their parents either perform well or maybe not do so well at all, you know. So it's not necessarily just about the competition, it's also about that shared experience and that, the shared achievements that come out of games that I think can be really beneficial.
It's almost as though it's a domestic form of KTP, knowledge transfer partnerships at work here in terms of across the generations, which is great. I mean, looking again in more detail at the research by Cadbury, 7 in 10, 70% actually now valuing gaming as a vital way of enjoying family time. I mean, this suggests that actually the tipping point has been well and truly passed. And what we've actually got here is a fundamental change in terms of obviously your games console becomes an essential part of the home environment.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's parents are recognizing that it's quality time together, you know, so they're not just passing time. They can see the benefits of this knowledge sharing, as you say, the healthy competition, and actually the result is that it's nurturing the bond between the family. And we've seen that it's not just parents that are getting involved, it's also grandparents. So 1 in 5 of the respondents were grandparents, so it's having a cross-generational impact, and that's incredibly important when we can't necessarily go to see each other in ways we traditionally would. And the fact that we've got things like video games or video conferencing and ways to engage is brilliant. But what's unique about video games is what you picked up on already. It's that interactivity, the challenges that they present, and the narratives that we can build together, you know, as we sit on the sofa together, the narratives that we can build, the stories that we can tell, the knowledge sharing that goes on. I think that's really where the social bond is enhanced.
Of course, there is that challenge, which is why I mentioned Wii Fit, of course, that if you're just sitting on the sofa all the time, just gaming, it's not necessarily the best lifestyle choice to actually be made. However, Cadbury's nevertheless have developed the Heroes League. Share with us, Lynn, talk to us about the Cadbury's Heroes League.
Yeah, so the Cadbury's Heroes League is in response to the research. And I think it's important to note that, you know, video games should be part of a kind of healthy and active lifestyle. So, and as you said, with the Wii Fit and also the modern Nintendo version of that, the Ring Fit, we are, you know, seeing gaming consoles trying to encourage movement and healthy practices and healthy living. But to come back to the Cadbury Heroes League, it's an online tournament where celebrities and gaming influencers are training their relatives, just like has been happening in the front rooms all across the country, to play a video game. Only the relatives that are playing the video game are going to form like the ultimate team, and they're going to compete against one another in an online tournament. So Louise Redknapp's being trained by her kids to play Street Fighter. And Jordan Banjo and Roman Kemp, they're training up their mums, you know, so there's this knowledge sharing that we're talking about is actually going to happen in the gaming league. And then they're going to compete against one another on this online streamed event that's actually being hosted at the Gfinity Arena on the 14th of November.
And there is certainly a huge market for people actually on various social channels or indeed YouTube, etc., actually just watching these games take place. It's almost as though there's a kind of meta-narrative going on with people actually watching people engaging in the game as well as taking part in the game itself. Where do you sit with respect to that, Lynn? Will you be actively taking part, or is it a case of, no, I'm an objective scientist, I'm going to step away from the whole process?
Well, actually, my research at Aberty, I'm actually a practitioner, so I make video games that aim to bring people together. And I sort of study them as well as looking at other people's video games. So I kind of believe that you can benefit from participation, but there's different levels of participation that people are comfortable with. And you can actually get an awful lot out of watching. And I think we can see that with the popularity in watching games being streamed on platforms like YouTube and Twitch, that people get a lot out of watching. And then, as you say, the narratives and stories that you can build around play. But yeah, for me, I think there is a chance, you know, to feature in the Cadbury's Heroes League. So I'm already a gamer, so I don't know if I apply. So I'm going to need to find myself a relative that I can teach games to.
Clearly, we could start that campaign now. But I mean, in terms of the actual sort of approach itself, I mean, you don't strike me as being a Street Fighter person, Lynn. But you know, I could be wrong on this. I mean, are you more Call of Duty? Are you more kind of what's your kind of particular forte with respect to games?
Well, I like a lot of kind of games at the fringes. So I think that, you know, console games and ones that are quite competitive and have fighting, they have a place. But actually, there's games of all kinds of different flavors. And, you know, at the beginning of lockdown, like many people, I got sucked in by Animal Crossing New Horizons, you know, and the idea of being able to wander about and build a village and make friends and play online with my friends. But more recently, I'm having a bit of a flashback to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, because the remastered version of that's just been released. And my husband and I, we sit on the sofa together, taking turns swapping the controllers around, just like I used to do when I was 12 with my sister at home, you know. So yeah, I like gaming of all different kinds, and but yeah, I don't play Call of Duty so much myself.
Well, indeed. Okay, so Lynn, where can people find out more information about the Cadbury Heroes League?
If you want to find out more and actually have a chance to perhaps feature in the final tournament, then head over to Instagram and visit @CadburyUK, and all the information's there about how to get involved.
And presumably, as we said, is it a case of the family that plays together stays together? Is this a wonderful way of actually crossing the generations? Because I see even grandparents have been involved with respect to training up in terms of using video games and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that playing together, you know, we could all take a little bit more time out of our busy schedules and value play a little bit more, because it has such benefits to our social connectedness, our well-being, and but also our creativity and problem solving, you know. So there's personal benefits as well as social benefits across generations that we can get out of playing games together. So I hope that people will take this opportunity during this difficult time to find a little room in their lives for play. I think it's so important.
Dr. Lynn Love, Division of Games and Arts at Abertay University. Huge thanks and happy gaming, Lynn.
Yeah, thanks to you too, Alex.
Well, it may well be a case of simply wanting to hibernate, because it is that time of the year, after all, when most mammals have tended to say, right, let's just give up completely. Or maybe it's the pandemic, but a third of the nation is struggling to sleep amid the stresses of 2020. 73% of us are napping throughout the day due to exhaustion. And indeed, 40% of British folk are actually using the sounds of technology to help them sleep. Now, we're not talking about pneumatic drills here, but we're talking about something completely different. And in fact, to help us drift off, a new album, Sound Asleep, has just been produced. And to talk us through this and also why technological sounds can be so smoothing and indeed soothing, we're delighted to welcome sleep expert Hope Bastine. How are you, Hope?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. And also the director at Curry's PC World, that's the wonderful Corinne Mills. How are you, Corinne?
Hey, Alex, I'm good, thanks. Good, thanks.
Good. Hope, I mean, I mentioned about a pneumatic drill, obviously, but I'm like one or two people might find that quite soothing. But technology, is it just a case of this is the next stage in human development in the 21st century that we need buzzers and bleeps and tweeps to effectively help us begin to lose consciousness?
Well, technology is increasingly become a huge part of our lives, and we are surrounded by it. And the sounds that it emits falls within a very broad range called white noise. It is a very broad range, and we've discovered that the lower end of the range is actually very soothing and very calming, a bit like the hum of the fridge or the dishwasher, the waterfall of the dishwasher, but even much more subtle sounds that we've incorporated into the album. And so the white noise induces the alpha brainwave state, which is the calming pre-sleep state. And it is a great way of sort of de-stressing from the day and winding down and prepping for a good night's sleep.
Corinne, I can never imagine anybody actually falling asleep at Curry's PC World, but I suppose it could theoretically happen. What did you think when this idea of actually teaming Curry's PC World up with music producers Obelisk and, of course, Hope to actually produce this Sound Asleep album?
Well, we jumped at the chance. It was a really, the stat you talked about at the beginning that 40% of customers were using tech to help them sleep was the bit that kind of really surprised us. So we jumped at that chance to kind of just collaborate and use one of our stores, which is full of all this amazing tech to record and just play and explore and record. and then throw in that expertise and science behind it to create something different. And we just saw it as a brilliant opportunity to help our customers sleep, which, you know, given everything that's going on, was just a chance that we didn't want to miss. So it was nice to do something a bit different.
I did suggest hibernation might be a way forward, but Hope, maybe you have one or two things to say about that. Maybe we can't actually just go down to that line, no matter how appealing it might seem. However, the way in which we actually nod off on public transport, I can understand that. I can even understand dropping off at the theatre or the cinema. On the floor, I know a couple of people have actually done that in times past, but falling asleep on the toilet and indeed in a pub. Is this just a case of these are just symptoms of the cause, Hope?
I think you're right there. We have a problem at home at the moment because most of us are working from home. So the work chill space boundaries have been blurred. So a lot of people mistakenly are sitting in bed with their laptops doing their work. And it's the same space where they're supposed to be dialing down and relaxing and falling asleep. So when you mentioned like falling asleep at the pub, it's a completely different space, and a pub is about not just a social stimulation, but just getting away, taking a break and switching off. So that doesn't really surprise me, and it's kind of quite an interesting tidbit there.
Do we sometimes worrying about staying awake, I mean, basically getting to sleep? You know, if we don't get our 7 or 8 hours, we start panicking, and that actually makes it far worse because we start worrying about it.
Yes, it's called orthosomnia. So the anxiety about falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up through the night, or even sometimes the way that we use sleep tracking also creates this orthosomnia. This creates the anxiety, which is completely counterintuitive to the relaxation state that we need to be in for sleep. So the worst thing you can do is worry about sleep. Mm.
Now, this particular album, as I say, recorded using a combination of traditional microphones and special recording devices. I'm intrigued by the titles, Kitchen, Living Room, Home Office. Was that a deliberate choice, Hope, to actually sort of say, yeah, we want to make sure that if this is the sound of the kitchen, this is what we're going to put in here with white noise as well?
Yeah, the idea was to create a sort of a story soundscape with the different rooms in our house. We've got the office, the living room, which is a bit more chill, and the kitchen noises, and some of them are surprising as well. So we actually used we cut up the sound, but we used a portion of the blender, for example, which is really, really surprising. But because we use the lower end of the sound frequencies on that, it creates the lovely white noise space that we need to relax.
We seem to have moved on quite a bit from when it was a case of you want to listen to sounds of the forest or rainfall. That's what you need to actually listen to. You know, this is a different world entirely. Corinne, have you tried any of these yourself? I mean, have you got a particular liking for, I don't know, Home Office, for instance, in terms of, yes, if I need to recharge my batteries and go unconscious for a little while, listening to Home Office is my solution.
So actually, I think what we're seeing is Living Room seems to be the one that's getting a few more people listening to that one, and everyone's kind of saying is their favorite. I kind of get why, and I've definitely given these a go. I think my challenge with sleep is more having a very young daughter at the moment, but so it's not necessarily getting off to sleep. That's pretty easy, but yeah, I've given it a go, and it's all good fun trying. But it's also an important thing. I think the thing that's really helped me with sleep actually is that switching off the tech that last hour in terms of screen time and listening to this sort of thing, just to really get your brain in the right place and just to relax. That's the thing that's really helped me.
And of course, Corinne, from the overall view of this whole system, presumably it is a case of this is just a whole new world when you're a father as well. Have you tried it with the child? I mean, in terms of, you know, try listening to the sound of the kitchen. It might just work.
Well, actually, Hope has been talking to us and explaining that it's kind of like 1940s was a time when kind of parents were discovering that things like washing machines and that as they were coming in and noise and white noise was helping their own children sleep. And that's kind of where this research has come from, which is children were noticed enjoy the sound of the vacuum and those sorts of things and were nodding off to it. So that's kind of been a bit of an inspiration, actually. My own daughter's got a toy that plays a certain frequency in white noise. And it's again why it was kind of a particular passion for me to get involved in this.
And of course, hope, as one of our regular sleep consultants and specialists, Stephanie Romaszewski, often says, it's the quality of the sleep that's also important. This presumably is a wonderful way of actually moving into the deeper sleep, that sort of the from alpha sleep into the deeper sleep, which is probably, I think, the most beneficial kind of sleep we can get.
It's the one that makes us feel full of beans when we wake up. Each one is important, but that deep sleep state, you're right, is where we do our most reparation and get the most restoration out of it. And using sounds like the White Noise album does enhance our sleep quality, because the more relaxed you are before you go to sleep, the better your sleep quality is going to be.
I like to think of it as rebooting the human mind, really, for a time,
yeah,
really. I
mean, absolutely, yeah.
The classic line, I'm sure you might have used this, Corinne, in times at Curry's PC World, have you tried switching off and switching on again? Maybe it's a version of that we're looking at here.
Yeah,
no, very true, definitely.
So where can we go to find out further details about this particular album, Hope, and indeed the study and the survey as well, and actually, you know, obviously, check it out from local branches of Curry's PC World. Where's the route?
You can log into the Spotify app or the Apple, and if you just type in Curry's Sound Asleep, you can listen to the soundscapes. They are 7 minutes long because it takes the brain about 6 to 7 minutes to switch gears and get used to being in that new relaxed gear, which is just perfect for beginning to wind down. And then I think Corinne knows best about where to get more information on the Curry's website.
Yeah, so if customers, like you say, pop into the store and ask around there, but also curries.co.uk, you can jump into the soundscapes that Hope mentions and learn a bit more. And actually next week on our social platform, we're going to be sharing wider tips and tricks to use tech or not use tech at the right time to help sleep. So yeah, follow us on social.
Sounds sensational. Using binaural and isochronic frequencies to creating an audio illusion of a steady, slower pulsation that moves the brain state from alpha to theta simulation. I just have this thought, actually, if you ever have sort of any irate customers coming into Curry's PC Worlds, not that you would, but if they were overexcited, for instance, you just put this particular track on and they just fall into a nice sort of peaceful, calm pattern. It's just a little way forward. Maybe not. It's been lovely sharing some thoughts with you, good self, today. We've got two final questions for you. They're pretty much our audience satisfaction ones, but Hope, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
Yes, it's been wonderful, very interesting. Thank you.
Excellent. And Corinne, has it worked for yourself?
Yes, yeah, perfect.
Splendid. The next critical question is, can we prevail upon you both, hopefully in the not too distant future, to return? Will you come back?
But definitely.
Of course, yeah.
So why pretend you
Earlier this week, we were talking about clearly the low interest rates, 0.75%, etc., and of course the spectre, perhaps, of banks, certainly the big six, beginning to start thinking very seriously about charging current account customers. These are all impacts that probably will come out of interest rates. But what if we had negative interest rates? Well, we're delighted to actually welcome the director at Quilter to actually talk us through this whole process. That's the wonderful Sarah Waring. How are you, Sarah?
Hi, Alex. I'm good, thank you.
I mean, Sarah, this particular sort of aspect of the pandemic that we're all experiencing and so on and so forth with finance and so on, it'll concern a large number of people, actually, the fact that what's the point of actually having a bank account in the first place or putting our money in banks if literally we're going to have to pay for the privilege of doing so?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, negative interest rates are where you earn absolutely nothing on your money or on your savings, and you do in turn have to pay the bank or building society to hold your money for you. We're aware that the Bank of England have been asking banks and building societies to ensure they're prepared for negative interest rates. So it is a real possibility. We've done some research in Quilter, and it shows that 76% of people out there are unwilling to pay banks and building societies. But I guess the reality is that they may not actually have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, over 40 people, or shall we say, the over 40s hold 90% of the UK's savings. There's a major shock actually coming from this point of view in terms of, obviously, we've been told for so long to actually save and save and save, etc. But does that mean it's the end to sort of the financial transactions and savings as we know it?
Yeah, well, as you say, more people are actually saving. So again, in our research, it's showing that a quarter of the over 40s are actually saving more now than they did before the pandemic. So although interest rates are an all-time low already, people are actually saving more because they're generally still in work or on furlough, and they're not splashing out on things like new cars or holidays. They're also kind of really conscious of what the economy might do, what the future might hold, so they want that safety net in place. So 26% in lockdown has realised that they actually need an emergency fund in place. So although rates are low and could go negative, there's more money in cash than there has been previously.
So what's the solution, Sarah? What are the kind of key things that you would recommend people to actually do? Just invest in a bigger mattress?
Well, it's important to probably remember that the fundamentals haven't changed. So regardless of the rates today and the rates next week, it's been hard to get a real rate of return from cash for quite some time. So it is worth considering investing. It's at times like these where riskier assets like stocks and shares tend to win, and safer assets like cash tend to lose. So it is worth thinking about your options. So we know that investing can be daunting, but it doesn't need to be. So if people are nervous or they need help, then a financial advisor is a really great option to help them make the most of their money. And there are lots of options. So some people fear having to tie their money up for decades or having to take large amounts of risk. And that isn't always the case when it comes to investing.
Would it be a case of maybe thinking of investing in gold in this particular instance?
It's all down to personal circumstances. So when it comes to investing, there's probably three things to think about. The first one is, how much can you afford to invest? We would recommend always leaving some in cash for emergencies and rainy days. How much can you afford to put aside? The second one would be about protecting it from tax. So don't let the tax man get all the growth. And ISAs can be a great, great way of doing that. And then the third one is to speak to a professional. So go through things like how much risk you want to take, whether gold's the right option, whether it's more stocks and shares and equities. And it's worth mentioning that most initial consultations with advisors tend to be free. So you don't have to fear kind of forking out for that initial consultation.
Yes, because it very much be a kind of double, indeed, to probably triple whammy if, in addition to your bank starting to charge you for your current account when it's actually in credit, you also have to pay for additional stuff on the first meeting as well. But that's another issue. Sarah, if we've got folk listening to this who might be a little bit younger and they're sort of thinking about careers and such like, why should, and they're saying, I want to be the next Sarah Waring, director at Quilter. What sort of suggestions would you actually have for them?
Yeah, but there's lots of opportunities to get into financial services, financial advice, if people are looking at that as a career. I myself actually joined a graduate scheme in 2005, so 15 years ago. And in Quilter, we do have a kind of graduate scheme or a financial advisor school. And there's lots of options. You can be qualified within 12 weeks if you want to go really quickly, or you can take your time, do it over 58 weeks. But it's a great career, and we're really looking to bring new blood into the industry because There's a lot of older advisors who are actually leaving. So there's a huge amount of opportunity.
I tend to use the phrase experientially enhanced or chronologically gifted as opposed to old Sarah these days. It's just a minor thing from that point of view. But returning again to the main theme in terms of obviously keeping aware on the change in interest rates and various other factors, how can people find out further information about the topic of the story? I mean, is it just a case of just check out the financial pages, or is there a website that at Quilter that people can go to?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be delighted to point people towards our website, which is quilterfinancialadvisors.co.uk.
Sarah, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Be well, and I'm sure we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Take care now.
Take care. Thank you.
We are, in most cases, a fairly altruistic society. We like to make those sacrifices. We also like to ensure that, as far as possible, we support initiatives and so on and so forth. And as a result of that, it's very good news to actually find that we can now actually help charities at the click of a button, even more wonderful than ever before. And to actually talk us through some of these wonderful ways in which we can do this, we're delighted to welcome from the charity partnership sector at Kindred, the wonderful Jackie Mills. How are you, Jackie?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. Thank you.
Now, Kindred Clever Shopping Tools. It takes less than 30 seconds to install, but its benefits can quite frankly last a lifetime for charities and local communities. Talk to us about it, Jackie.
Yes, you've hit the nail on the head. So if you download the Clever Shopper onto your desktop or to your laptop, you can choose to donate cash back from brands that we have relationships with, which are about over 25,000. So the Clever extension sits on your browser, on your laptop, as I said, and it follows you around the internet when you're doing your shopping, activating great cashback deals. And from those deals that you get the cashback from, you donate some of that cashback, all of the cashback, minimum of 1% of the cashback to a chosen charity. We have over 40,000 charities on the platform. So hopefully there'll be lots of support out there for the small charities, medium and the large ones. And that's how it works. It's very simple and it's an easy way to raise money without having to think about it.
Now, in terms of some funds that have already been raised, Kindred has actually helped to raise over £500,000 for the NHS charities with Kindred's Rainbow T-shirt campaign. And indeed, as an organisation, it does seem as though you provide a wonderful kind of interface between the good intentions of the online shopper and, of course, the charities who desperately, even more so now in the kind of pandemic days that we're faced with, require additional financial support.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the charities that we're working with at the moment, since the Rainbow T-shirt campaign and since we've done, you know, all the great stuff for NHS charities together, we've also, you know, managed to help lots of charities. Everybody is so deserving and they've seen a 48% drop in donations. Obviously, you can't walk past the man on the street and give him a pound anymore in his shaker tin because not everybody's out and about like they were. So we're really giving the opportunity for all charities to get involved, ask their donors to download the extension at kindred.co and select the charity and off we go.
And if you don't select a charity, is there a sort of automatic default that effectively other charities like NHS and so on, Florence Nightingale Foundation, Victims of Crime, they will actually benefit?
Yeah, we do have that option. I think when we were doing the NHS Rainbow campaign, it was defaulted. But, you know, when you're registering, you actually do have that choice of picking your own charity. So that's what we encourage people to do. And also the nice thing about this is that you can switch between the charities. So it's not like you have to stick with that one. You can change your charity each week.
I was just wondering, Jackie, whether there was a kind of sort of randomizer, because I know occasionally folks will say, I don't know which one to choose. They're all worthy causes and so on. In which case, in a sense, a randomizer could be probably quite an effective way of just sort of saying that, well, I'm donating and it's going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly that. But, you know, we can always help them choose.
So how can people actually go and find out more details about this Kindred Clever Shopping Tool?
Oh, you can go to our website, kindred.co, and you'll find the extension browser right there for you to download.
And have you found yourself doing more shopping online yourself over the last 6 or so months, etc.?
I don't really need an excuse. The only thing I need is the only good thing about this is I am still doing lots, and the thing is now I feel good about doing it. That's the difference. I'm more of a conscious consumer, shall we say.
Very good. Excellent choice there. Kindred.co, as we mentioned, best place to go to find out further details from that point of view. Jackie Mills, Charity Partnerships at Kindred, huge thanks and keep on with your excellent work.
Oh, thank you so much, Alex.